covered by the mold of ignorance. Your nature lines a male, sometimes a female, sometimes human, sometimes human beings, sometimes demigod, sometimes a bird, an animal, and so on. This way, wandering within the material world is accepted as different types of bodies, is brought about by his activities under the influence of the modes of nature. Actually, the living entity is part and parcel of the Lord. Therefore, he is spiritual quality. The living entity is never material, and his material conception, he is as brilliant as the personality of Godhead. The sunshine are very brilliant. The Lord is like the full shining sun, living entities. And entities are like the small particles of that sun, which constitute the all-pervading sunshine. When these small particles are covered by the cloud of Maya, they lose their shining capacity. When the cloud of Maya is gone, particles again become brilliant and shining as soon as the living entity is covered by the ignorance of Maya or darkness. He cannot understand his relationship with the Supreme God. Somehow or other, if he comes before the Lord, he can see himself as shining as the Supreme Lord, although he is not as extensive as the Lord. Because the living entity desires to imitate the Supreme Lord, he is covered by Maya. We cannot imitate the Lord, nor can we become the Supreme Enjoyer. This is not possible. And when we think it is, we become conditioned by Maya. Thus, the encagement of the living entity under the clutches of Maya is brought about by forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Lord. That's paragraph number one. Next. Under the influence of Maya, the living entity becomes exactly like a person haunted by a ghost. Such a person speaks all kinds of nonsense. When the living entity is covered by the influence of Maya, he becomes a so-called scientist, philosopher, politician, or sociologist, or socialist, and at every moment presents different plans for the benefit of human society. All these plans are ultimately failures because they are illusory. Well, there's the book. In this way, the living entity forgets his position as an eternal servant of the Lord. He, instead, becomes a servant of Maya. In any case, he remains a servant. It is his misfortune that, by forgetting his real contact with the Supreme Lord, he becomes a servant of Maya. As a servant of Maya, he sometimes becomes a king, sometimes an ordinary citizen, sometimes a brahmana, a shudra, and so on. Sometimes he's a happy man, sometimes a prosperous man, sometimes a small insect. Sometimes he is in heaven and sometimes in hell. Sometimes he is a demigod and sometimes he is a demon. Sometimes he is a servant and sometimes he is a master. In this way, the living entity wanders all over the universe. Only when he comes in contact with the bona fide spiritual master can he understand his real constitutional position. He then becomes disgusted with material existence. At that time, in full Krishna consciousness, he regrets his past experiences in material existence. This regret is very beneficial because it purifies the living entity of material conditional life. He then prays to the Lord to engage in his service. And at that time, Krishna grants liberation from the clutches of Maya. Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita 7:14. Adhiyesha gunamayi mama maya duratya mame vayeta patyante mayametam tarantite. This divine energy of mind consists of the three modes of material nature, which is difficult to overcome, but those that surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. And the final paragraph. Only by the grace of Krishna can one get out of the clutches of Maya. He says it in reverse. It is not possible to get out by speculation, mental speculation, or other activities. When the living entity understands his real position by the grace of Krishna, he keeps himself always fit in Krishna consciousness and acts accordingly. Thus, he gradually becomes completely free from the clutches of Maya. When he is strong in Krishna consciousness, Maya cannot touch him. In this way, in the association of Krishna conscious devotees, the living entity can get free from the contamination of material existence. In this connection, Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, Tate Krishna Bhaji Kare Guru Ra Sevan Maya Jala Chute Paya Krishnara Charan. Translation. In the Krishna conscious state, the living entity engages in devotional service under the direction of a spiritual master. In this way, he gets out of the clutches of Maya and takes shelter under the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Madhya Leela 22, text 25, end of purport. Although this is an allegory, and it's Narada's explanation of the allegory, he's going right into Sankhya philosophy with King Puchini Bari. Sankhya philosophy is analyzing the component parts of matter, and in contrast, the soul, which is distinct from matter and the varieties of matter. Chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita is similarly a kind of Sankhya philosophy 101 presentation, and in the third canto, in detail, Lord Kapila Dev presents Sankhya philosophy, and this is a little piece of it. The benefit of knowledge, when it's, you know, the real kind of knowledge, is it's both direction, gives us a clarity where to go and where not to go, and it strengthens detachment. So within the, what's the value of detachment, within the purport, it's made very clear, the living entity, being part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is as brilliant as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or of the same nature, or the brilliance language is used to compare a spark to a big fire, or a particle of sun shine to the entire sun planet. So as the quality of the sun planet, so the quality of the particle of sunshine, a spark to the big fire. So the living entity is qualitatively quite distinct from matter. But when the living entity desires to imitate the Supreme Enjoyer, that's the but. This rebellious spirit, we want to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We want to be the Enjoyer. We want to be the proprietor. You can't be, because there is already somebody in that position. Well, let's depose him. It's like close our eyes and pretend he's not there and then go forward. So Maya then covers that living entity. And when the living entity becomes covered, no possibility of distinguishing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just not possible. It's the nature of Maya. It covers the living entity. In fact, accepting what is not to be what is and what is to be what is not. It's ignorance. That's knowledge in the mode of ignorance. You accept that which is not to be done as what is to be done. And what is to be done, that's not to be done. Knowledge in the mode of ignorance. They're quite contradictory. Knowledge and ignorance, they're contradictory. So Maya covers a living entity into the point of accepting what is not. Just like during some of our discussions, there's been some discussion about chanting. So when chanting, we know that the teaching Abhinatam Nama Namino, the name of Krishna is none different than Krishna. But we don't act that way. Because we're calling Krishna's name so Krishna comes and we're ignoring him. We don't do that with one another. It's just rude. We don't do that. Hey, Nanda Gopal. Hey, Nanda Gopal. We don't do that. But with Krishna, we do that. Why do we do that? Covered by Maya. So why is it difficult to be attentive when chanting? Answer, we're covered by Maya. It's the nature of Maya. It covers our consciousness in such a way we ignore Krishna. We wanted to ignore Krishna in order to enjoy independently of him. So Maya facilitates. So the very means of our deliverance is something that we're, because of our disease, we don't pay attention to. It's a very nice example, like someone that has fever. Anyone that's had fever knows what it's like. Besides, your body is completely weak. You have no strength. You also have no appetite. If somebody offers you something, no. If you tried to eat, it would aggravate the fever. Don't eat and have a fever. But you don't have appetite in any case. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, the very same thing that the body needs, which is nourishment, you have no appetite for. So what do? The doctor prescribes some medicine, you take some medicine. And if it's good medicine, and there's a little capacity, resiliency within the body, then the medicine starts to act, and very slowly, little appetite comes, and then very quickly, that's all right. It's liquidy thing. Because you have a fever. Slowly, slowly, some strength comes back to the body, and the fever starts to subside, and so on. So, our lack of attraction for Krishna is like that. It's a feverish condition. It's a diseased condition. And being covered by Maya is a diseased condition. It's not at all natural. It's an unhealthy state. But we're so familiar with it, we think that's it. That's life. It's, no attraction for Krishna. And that's just life. Like we were discussing from the verse yesterday, the Uber Karma notion. And when people live in urban situations or, let's say, work in factories. Prabhupada likens factories to Mukha Karma or mines. How many incidents have there been in the world these days where miners are trapped in the mine? You know, in China and Peru and this place and that place. And guess what? People still go work in mines. Because, you know, get some money. So probably they're paying them more now because they're risking their life. But they'll still go and do it, even though they're risking their life. For what? Get some money. Same thing with people that are thieves do. They risk their life. Get some money. This way, that way. Get some money. Mukha karma. And once having been accustomed to that, it's just, that's life. You know, Prabhupada told the story about Christian preacher that went to some place in Sheffield, England, or something like that, where there's coal mines, and he was trying to convince the people that they should take up Christianity. And if you don't do that, you'll go to hell. And they were saying, well, what's hell like? And the language that he gave of describing what hell was like sounded like the coal mines. So they said, problem. And then when he said, but there's no newspapers. No, horrible. One becomes conditioned. Or here's another practical example. When I was growing up, I saw New York City on a map, but there was no idea of ever going to that place because it was like unthinkable, hellish conditions, just even think about it. But I joined the Hare Krishna movement and they sent me to New York. From a nice place to New York because of something, circumstance. So I stayed in New York. And I just like stayed in New York and stayed in New York and stayed in New York and stayed in New York. And it became, you know, for preaching, wonderful. So much opportunity for preaching. Then after some time, we got a farm in mid-Pennsylvania. So from time to time, well, it became a regular thing. I would conduct different programs at the farm for the devotees to go and get away from their service, a little break. And but I noticed, having been away for a week, 10 days at the farm, just driving back to New York City, you could feel the energy, intense. The cars are going faster and everyone's, you know, this intense energy. But when you live there, it's like, you know, what's the big deal? Walk fast, that's okay. Life. You just become conditioned by the circumstance that you're in. You don't even see the contrast that there's an alternative and whether that alternative is superior. When visitors would come to New York, our temple, the Brooklyn Temple, is situated right above the subway, the A train. And when the A train goes through, every, you know, so many minutes, there's a vibration. You know, the subway's vibrating, the cars, and the ground, and the building. So people that are from California, they can't sleep at night because they think it's an earthquake every 7 minutes. But because I'm used to that, it's like, no problem. But when I go to the farm and get inaugurated, and stay in the cabin, there's a little pond where they have these bullfrogs. And all night long, it's a bullfrog concert. You know, where they make their thing go out and make this loud noise. And the crickets. Now, for people that live in the country, that's like country sound, no problem. Just become, these are examples, and we become conditioned. And we become attached to our, you know, our dhoti, or our shoes, or, you know, our little possessions. We're like, there was a time when we didn't have a dhoti, and now we have a dhoti, and now we're attached to our dhoti, our little piece of the material energy. I'm conditioned and attached so quickly. This is the force of Maya. The deluding potency. And the deluding potency is under Krishna's control. So guess what? It's very strong. And unless Krishna says, okay, Maya, leave them alone. Back off. Unless Krishna says that, Maya's got control. And there's nothing the living entity can do to get free from that. Nothing. You just get different varieties of it, that's all. That's all. Maybe a lighter intensity, or a heavier intensity. So like we were hearing the various planetary systems. Now in this verse we're hearing different bodies. Because the bodies are being developed by two factors, guna and karma, mentioned in the last line of the verse. Yata karma gunam bhavaha. Bhavaha is the bodies that are taking birth according to karma and guna. Yata karma gunam bhavaha. Just like Chaturvarna Maya Shrishtam guna karma vibhagasha. Krishna says the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. The four divisions of occupation are created by me, Maya Shrishtam. But it's created by Krishna according to guna and karma. Or in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that bodies are generated from work. We probably don't think so much like that. We think our paycheck is generated by our work. Or some work product is generated which then earns us our paycheck. So we can maintain ourselves. We probably don't think about our activity as generating bodies. But that's what Krishna says. So this is a product of previous activity, along with the particular modes of nature with which we associate. Haranam guna samgosya sada sadyoni janmasu. Because the living entity is developing their bodies through their activities and the good and the favorable and unfavorable circumstances. Something that there's a devotee who lives in America whose name is Peter Burwash, and he's a very inspirational speaker. He traveled his livelihood as he's and whatever you call those people, a motivational speaker for Fortune 500 companies. He's a devotee, and when he met Srila Prabhupada so many years ago, he was a tennis professional, not just a tennis player. He had tennis schools, multiple tennis schools around the world. And in the course of his travels, he met Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada sat him down and instructed him on how to live his life as a devotee while continuing in his professional work. One time was a 3-hour session. He didn't record it on a recorder, but he recorded it in his mind. And every year we have an annual, we call it Festival of Inspiration, and he's the keynote speaker every year. Plays his path because he's really good. He says he spends 15 minutes every day, 364 days of the year, so that he can make this presentation on one. So it's a meditation for him, serving Prabhupada by the skills that Krishna has given him. Anyways, one of the things that he tells every year is this story I'm about to tell. He gives this example that he was cautious because he was earning money, and he saw that the devotees at that time were living in a very primitive condition. beginnings of the Hare Krishna movement, we didn't have nice big temples and built guest houses. We didn't, you know, it was very, very rudimentary. And there was some plan to something to help improve the temple, some needed renovation. So Peter Burwash said he gave $100, or maybe it was $500, some sacrifice of his earnings to the temple president. It was in Hawaii. And the next day the temple president was gone. Just ran away with the money. So the next time he was with Srila Prabhupada, he shared this with Prabhupada. And he shared how he was very disappointed. Not so much that, you know, it was his money, but just, you know, that this devotee had, you know, just absconded with temple funds. And Prabhupada didn't take the position of being sympathetic with him. He cautioned him, never become angry at the instrument of your own karma. I'll say it again. Never become angry at the instrument of your own karma. This was Prabhupada teaching this nice devotee. And he never forgot it. And he repeats it. So we don't forget it also. Every year. That's one piece that's in every presentation. And there's a very similar message that Srila Prabhupada gave to Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Some of you know who Bhakti Tirtha Swami was. Long story, but I'll make it very quick. Bhakti Tirtha Swami grew up in a ghetto. You know, in big cities, they probably have ghettos where people live here in Hyderabad. There's lots and lots of it in Bombay. Very visible all over the place. So he grew up in one of those places. But he was a very exceptional personality in many ways. And when it was time for his college admission, it was right after Martin Luther King was shot. So there was a big, like, move in America at the time for civil rights. People that had been deprived and pushed around. There was this, you know, the liberal wing were trying to pull those people up. So Ivy League schools were offering special full scholarships to students that came from ghetto situations. So he got admission to Princeton University with a full scholarship from a ghetto. And by the time he was a senior in his graduating class, he was the valedictorian, you call it here the gold medalist, the top student, and he was the president of his class, black man, the president of his graduating class at Princeton University. So he was on his way to, like, you know, a very fantastic career. Brilliant person, charismatic, leading person at a time when, you know, it was cool to be, brilliant black man. You got, like, lots of appreciation out of the crowd and being, you know, what he was. But somewhere along the line, I know what happened. There was from our Brooklyn temple, we had sent a specialized team of devotees that distributed books, and one of the places they went was Princeton University. He got a book from a Bodhi named Sudhanu. He got one of Prabhupada's books. And when he read Prabhupada's book, it was incredible. It lodged in his heart and it grew. So that when he graduated, he was getting all these offers to do this and do that and make gobs of money and become a big famous person and a writer and a politician and so much stuff. But he wanted to meet the author of that book. And he heard that Prabhupada was visiting in New York, so he came to visit Prabhupada in New York. And while Prabhupada was there for a week, I'm almost finished with this little story. But when he got to the temple, he found that the devotees had racial prejudice. know, they discriminated against him because he was black. He's not like, he was very black. Not like, you know, fair, but very black. So when he had an opportunity to meet Srila Prabhupada, I'm skipping some details, but he shared this with Prabhupada. And it was like a really big thing for him to share with his spiritual master something that hurt him. That, so he said to Prabhupada, your teachings are completely something else, but your followers still have this racial prejudice. I know that's not your teaching, but they have this. And it was like a big expectant moment. How would Prabhupada reply? Prabhupada, it's a little bit like the Peter Birwash, you know, don't blame the instrument of your karma. He said, while that's not good at all, you're no better than they are. If you're disturbed by this, it means you're in bodily, he didn't elaborate, but you're in bodily consciousness. They're in bodily consciousness and that's not good. And you're in bodily consciousness and that's equally not good. He didn't know what Prabhupada would say, but when Prabhupada said it, his heart just exploded in joy. He said at that moment, I accepted Shukra Prabhupada as my spiritual master. Because I could understand that he was on a transcendental platform and he wasn't like patting me on the head or buddy-buddying or something, like trying to pacify me. He was giving transcendental knowledge. That's what Narada is doing here with King Pajini Bari. He's not, you know, Mr. Softy. He moved slowly by giving this allegorical presentation. But when he's giving the, you know, the real story, he's not soft about it. He's very strong. The objective is to take King Pajini Bari out of fruitive activity and onto the platform of pure devotional service. I'm going to tell you one more story. This is a Rupa Goswami description. Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami. Prabhupada mentions in the second paragraph of the purport, under the influence of Maya, the living entity becomes exactly like a person haunted by a ghost. So, a very similar, almost the same description is found in Rupa Goswami's writings, or Prabhupada is drawing from Rupa Goswami's writings. It's from Nectar of Devotion, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And there's a verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in which Rupa Goswami writes that bhukti and mukti are like two witches, bloodthirsty witches that are seated in the heart. And when such bloodthirsty witches are seated in the heart, there's no way that one can come to pure devotional service. Bhukti mukti spriha yavat. Pishachi hridi vartate. Pishachi is a witch. And hridi means heart. So it's not just a witch out there, but it's in your heart. Similar to being haunted by a ghost. Tavat sukhasyatra katam abhudhayo bhavet. So as long as this condition exists where bhukti, the desire for, like King Pajini Bari, the desire for material enjoyment through religious activity, or mukti, the desire for liberation, it's like witches, bloodthirsty witches. No. Anyway. Not nice. How is it possible that pure devotional service will ever blossom within the heart? So, when Rupa Goswami was writing or composing Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, during that period of time, Vallabha Acharya was visiting also in Vrindavan. Now we meet in Chaitanya Charitamrita that they had some association. It doesn't describe this association that they had in Vrindavan. Apparently this is in Bhagavatam Ratnakar. So Vallabha Acharya was a great scholar. He had some pride, but he was a great scholar. So with affection, Rupa Goswami requested Vallabha Acharya, you have this scholarship, can you read over my manuscript and point out whatever you might find is needing some attention? It's a little defective. Oh, yeah. Look at your scholar, my scholarship, look at your manuscript and tell you. He appreciated, as we do, Rupa Goswami's brilliant writing. But when he came to this verse, he suggested to Rupa Goswami, it's a little strong. Witches and ghosts. I mean, the idea is right, but the metaphor is a little too strong, I think. So Rupa Goswami said, let me consider this. Ajiva Goswami heard, what, he's criticizing my spiritual master? So separately, Vallabha Acharya was approached by Jiva Goswami, who gave a long list of scriptural examples where exactly the witch and ghost metaphor is used to describe the condition of the living entity that has bhukti or mukti. And Vallabha Acharya was very satisfied. Okay, it's not too extreme. It's scripturally founded. Very good. But when Rupa Goswami came to understand that Jiva Goswami had this little side discussion over here with Vallabha Acharya, he reprimanded him and said, why have you done this? I've asked him, he's a very great scholar, and I've asked him to assist me, and he's offering some advice. It's some service, and why have you done this? Spiritual master, and what you had written was right, and he was thinking what was right, so I wanted him to understand it was right. So one thing is, when we're out of this, it's a fact, or scripturally it's a fact, it's witches, bloodthirsty witches. And King Puchinibari is being protected from that condition by Narada, and it worked. The witches went away. He became a pure devotee. But another lesson from this Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami exchange is, while one may have some deep devotion for one's spiritual master, one has to be very careful in exercising that deep devotion for one's spiritual master and not make offenses or perhaps, you know, interfere with the relationship that one spiritual master and another spiritual master have with one another. I want you to be very careful in the matters of Vaishnava etiquette, up as well as sideways. So how does this condition of Maya, which is likened to blood-drinking witches or haunted persons? Then Prabhupada goes on to describe those haunted persons are philosophers and scientists and politicians and sociologists and philanthropists and talking all kinds of things about how to uplift society. Something I just learned from our meeting in Juhu here's a little GBC news. Presenting before the GBC, the executive committee presented before the GBC, that there are certain places where Srila Prabhupada visited. And those places are very sacred. Any temple where there's a deity is very special. But especially as special is where Prabhupada visited. So the wish is to have those properties that ISKCON owns very secure, so they can't be, you know, by negligence or inattention, somehow put at risk by aggressive people that might want to do some harm or something. Not just during our present time, but going into the future. So we're speaking about that. And Hari Vilas raised his hand and said, Prabhupada visited Yogi Bhajan and Srila Prabhupada stayed together at the Berkeley Temple. I didn't know that. But I saw the video of Yogi Bhajan seated and Srila Prabhupada. And Yogi Bhajan is turning to Srila Prabhupada saying, let us, moving his hands like this, let us, in this world that's filled with so much unrest and turmoil, let's bring everyone together and have them love one another. And Prabhupada interrupted and said, they will never. Just like that. And he's explaining the reason in the purport here that it's not just, you know, love one another and come together. It's accepting the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let's do that. Because then Maya is dispelled. But unless that happens, Maya is not going to be dispelled. And it won't be, you know, just wave your hands. Love one another, come together, and be peaceful. It won't happen that way. Accepting the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like the example, the metaphor that's given is when the fire comes in contact with the wood, or when the spark comes again in contact with the fire, its illumination capacity becomes full. That's what is need to happen. And how is that going to happen? He gives the formula in the purport. By association with a pure devotee. One who is so illuminated. That's how it happens. And otherwise it's not going to happen. But Narada is serving that role in relation to King Pujinibari. And as a result, the Maya covering of King Pujinibari is going to be dispelled. Prabhupada concludes the verse, or the purport rather, by inviting the devotees to pray to Krishna, to be engaged in his service. And it's exactly what the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is. And it should be done in that spirit also, not just making some sound, but in a prayerful mood. In Krishna's association, serving him. Chanting is itself such a service. But even if we're, while chanting itself, we're being inattentive, what about the rest of our life? The very means of deliverance is mechanical. If that's the case, we have a long ways to go. So entering into a prayerful mood is very valuable. And assisted by this nice Sankhya philosophy, very clearly understanding what's our position, what's Krishna's position, what's the living entity's position, what's Prakriti's position, what's the difference between the internal potency and the external potency. It's to assist us so that we can perform the chanting of the holy name properly. In Harinam Chintamani, Haridas Thakur says the same thing. It's not possible to chant the holy name properly without some bandhagyan, you know, understanding what's what. You can get certainly benefit, but without understanding what's what, you can go in any direction with that. And people do. So many different directions. It's becoming very popular. I shared this with you last time I was here, and it's increased. Kirtan yoga in America is like a big thing. They have recording artists that sell bunches and bunches and bunches of CDs. They're impersonalists. They're not even impersonalists. They're like animals. Their personal life is disgusting. And their teaching is impersonalism. And they chant mantras and kirtan. People pay to go and hear them perform. So chanting is necessary, and sambandhagyan is also necessary. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam properly and assimilating its message is necessary, along with our chanting of the holy name. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada has given us all these rich literatures and this wonderful process of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, life's perfect. But the end is this quote by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, how to get free from material contamination. In the Krishna conscious state, the living entity engages in devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master. In this way, he gets out of the clutches of Maya and takes shelter under the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any questions? Yes?
In the process of spiritual journey, we come across many levels of teachers. What is the unique position of the spiritual master to arouse that kind of regretful feeling?
What's the unique quality or position of the spiritual master? Well, we can have multiple. The spiritual master is not only Diksha Guru, but also Shiksha Guru and Bhagavan Pradarshaka Guru. So like somebody goes on book distribution and they're offering this means of getting on the path to Krishna. Then there are persons that assist those individuals. So it's speaking, my understanding is it's speaking of, in this term spiritual master is the generic sense rather than, this unique one person that is my Diksha Guru that can perform this function. What's the unique quality? It's being empowered. It's a service, and to do any service, to walk across the floor, there's some empowerment. Or whatever else one does, there's some empowerment in service to Krishna. Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Para Pravartana. There's some empowering of Krishna's potency to be able to, Prabhupada once said, even to induce someone to chant the holy name even once, you can't do that without Krishna Shakti. So what's the uniqueness of that person? It's powered by Krishna to do so, authorized by Krishna to do so. That authorization is available just by Lord Chaitanya's words. As the classic of his instruction to Kurma. Wherever you go and whomever you meet, speak something about Krishna. By so doing, become guru and save the land. Within that instruction is the empowerment. Takes it to heart, not out of ego, but out of a mood of service, and speaks about Krishna to whoever they meet in an appropriate manner. Then there's empowerment. That's guru. By Lord Chaitanya's own definition. Microphone up here.
We are in diseased condition.
We're in which condition?
In diseased.
Diseased condition, okay.
And then we take the process of healing better.
That's the medicine, yeah.
It makes so much sense. But then sometimes it's going on and the person is not there. And it just goes down also. When the medicine is being administered, but then why not that very strong downfield also comes?
The last part wasn't clear. When, say the last part again?
When the medicine is being administered.
When the medicine is being administered.
Still the downfield also comes. Then
what happens?
The down phase.
Down phase.
In the valleys.
Okay.
They also come down.
Okay.
Why do they come?
Because we're attached.
It was very clear and
We like to be enjoyers. Serve it for a while, but it'd be an enjoyer also. And another explanation is just residual effect of our prior condition. Yes?
In the lecture, you wrote that in order to play the instrument of functional karma, so they is there no freedom of the other person involved?
Is there no what?
Even of the other person?
Of course. That's their responsibility. They don't have to be the instrument of your karma. So that, somebody insults you or somebody slaps you. Now you have some free will choices to make. if the free will spirit is weak and the modes of nature are prominently active, it will just be a knee-jerk reaction. Do something. You know, fire with fire. You slap them back or insult them back or, you know, whatever it is. One doesn't have to do that. There's free will choices involved. One of them is your own reaction is how you see that person. They have their free will choices to make too. Just a few little questions. Having desired to cross beyond this material world in this life, what consciousness we must carry while overcoming our struggles? Krishna consciousness. As Kali Yuga is degrading so rapidly, it is fearsome to think of next life. For a long period of time, as a brahmachari, I was distributing Prabhupada's books, and one of the ways in which I was distributing books was distributing books in the airport. And one of the airports that I distributed books in was JFK. We didn't have permission. So I was sneaking around. I wasn't in a dhoti because you can't sneak around in a dhoti. So I was dressed differently. So like blending in with all the travelers. And not too many devotees wanted to do that. But I wanted to do that. So I went alone for about a whole year, just every day to the airport. From 9 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night, and went back and hot milk and popcorn and took rest. So one of the routines that I had was I put the car in the parking lot, got my books ready, and sat and listened to a recording of Prabhupada's speaking. I did this for a long period of time because there's a particular passage that was very inspiring. And the very inspiring part was this. Prabhupada was explaining that a little bit of devotional service protects one from having to glide down to the animal species, and at least you'll get your human form of life in your next life and continue where you left off. And he explained all of that in multiple ways. But then Prabhupada said, but don't take advantage of this, because as Kali Yuga progresses, it will become much more difficult. So you get another, I'm going to repeat it, you get another opportunity in your next life to continue devotional service in case you did not complete it. But better you complete it. Because as Kali Yuga progresses, it becomes more difficult, and more difficult, and more difficult. And then shut the tape player off. One lifetime. Finish your business and go back. And the price that you have to pay, whatever that price is, it's worth it. Pay any price. Because it's not a desirable thing just to continue your devotional service in your next life where you left off. It's very difficult. And even in our present lifetime, as the generations pass, deterioration is going on so shockingly. Yes? It's one of those things that the older generation looks at the younger generation and thinks, oh my goodness, what's happening here? But you know, the younger generation thinks, hey, this is fun. And then that generation becomes a little bit older and look at the younger generation and go, oh my God, look at what they're doing. And it just keeps continuing like that. It gets further degraded and further. It's like a whirlpool that has this big circle around the outside, and then it starts to become smaller circles and goes down very fast. Kali Yuga. Finish your business in this life. Although you'll get another chance after this life to continue if you don't complete. Better to complete. It doesn't get easier. You should bring a magnifying glass. Krishna says that only his devotee of devotee is said to be devotee. What's the real meaning of devotee, of devotee? Real meaning is humility. It's something, the real meaning is I don't serve Krishna directly. I serve Krishna by serving Krishna's devotee. That's being the devotee of a devotee. And by that humble mood, Krishna is pleased. But supposing I think, I don't need a devotee, I just go serve Krishna. At the present, I'm so much affected by the mode of passion. Yesterday you said that this kind of people look for recognition. Here are your feelings, etc. But after coming to devotional service also, I'm doing this. So how do you get out of this? This is Vedanta Chaitanya's question, restated. You know, we have fruitive tendency. So we have that fruitive tendency. This was your question. So when we come to devotional service, we still have this fruitive tendency. How do we relieve ourselves of that fruitive tendency? So I can make our object of focus Krishna, and we become purified. We get received teachings that teach us the current problem of fruitive tendency. We have a means of purification, the chanting of Krishna's holy name. Forward, recognizing, it's like there's three kinds of traffic signals in America. There's red, means stop. Green means go. And there's another one. It's a yellow, means caution. And sometimes you pass through intersections and it's a flashing yellow. It means slow down. This is a dangerous intersection. You can go ahead, but proceed with caution. That's what this one is. You're entering devotional service, but fruitive tendency is there, so proceed with caution. Beware. Guard against acting with that tendency, knowing that because the tendency is there, it's going to come out. But guard against it. You explained one should never become angry at the instrument of his own karma. Similar teaching I have heard from my mentors that we should take responsibility for our own karma instead of blaming the person or situation. I find it difficult to apply this in practice. What to do? Practicing. One thing I can say is turn the table around and say, you know, if I do something or say something to another person that hurts that other person, I don't mean to do that, but somehow it hurts the other person, how would I like them to regard or interact with me? I mean, I'd like to be sorry for that thing that I did that was hurtful, but I'd like them to be able to forgive me. So same, if something happens that we feel hurt by, if we were that other person who was giving disturbance to someone, how would we want someone to deal with us? Pardon us. All the golden rule, that's what I'm speaking about. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. You'd like the world to be such and such. So instead of going, how come the world is like this? And look at that, and people doing this, and rah, rah, rah. Be the example of what you want the world to be. It's novel. Set the example. Teach by example. And so as you're going along teaching by example, somebody's not getting it. That it's, you know, more of the same. Here's a practical example that just came up. There are a number of persons who my life is in contact with that have very serious health issues. Some are cancer, some are having cancer surgery, some persons recently died of cancer, some persons are having other types of medical problems. It's just like, it's very painful. But something that really helps is when there are persons that come and show their care and concern. You know, the community comes and helps that family that has a health problem so that the whatever it is needs to get done so they can just free their minds from the worries of the day-to-day and give concern, give care to their family member. But when that doesn't exist, it hurts even more. Nobody's even said, Haribo, how are you doing? And, you know, very unhappy because of that. So the advice I gave to an individual in that circumstance, that's the world that we're in. So rather than saying what the world isn't, be the example of what the world is according to your capacity. Just continue to do that without condition. Not, you know, expecting that someone's going to do something in return. Don't have that expectation. Just be the example of what you'd like the world to be. What else can you do? You can't control the world. It may concern you what the world is, but you can't control it. One thing that you can do is your own Krishna consciousness, regardless of what the rest of the world is. So by example, this is what the teachings are. That's the same thing that Prabhupada was saying to Bhaktivedanta Swami and to Peter Burwash. And now repeating the same thing here. And while it may be difficult, continue to apply yourself like that. The teaching is there, live by the teaching. And get the strength to do so by the holy name, your nice sadhana, and the examples of those who set the standard for you in your life. And follow that example. Take inspiration from them. Help make the world a better place by your own life's example. When there are opportunities to extend care and concern and assistance to the struggling of other persons according to your capacity, extend yourself according to your capacity. That's the Vaishnava Sangha. Devotee care initiative that we started, the strategic planning thing a few years ago, and now Revati Raman is heading that group. But there are devotees all over the world that come together twice a year and make plans, and they're going throughout, you know, as their service goes about the world, they're carrying this message and setting the example because they value devotee care. They're teaching it and living it and sharing it. They've got a publication, they got a website, and, you know, they're carrying the instructions and setting the example. And so to make the world that kind of a place, instead of saying, how come devotees don't care about each other? Or giving care to the devotees. I'm part of the solution rather than part of the problem. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.